An unusual piece to open this program with tonight on Wednesday, the 6th day of April. Glad to have you here. This will be an unusual program tonight. It initially was supposed to be a part of a mixed bag, but one thing led to another. And we began to change directions. Jeffrey Bennett here for The Edge of Darkness. Maybe it's not as simple as that any longer. Keep all that in mind. I was mulling over several possible titles or considerations for this program tonight, which adequately expressed my view. I remember something in a previous commentary that a friend had made. He referenced Plato's coined phrase, ship of state, from his book, Republic. I believe my friend's reference was the sinking ship of state. Let me share with you something to ponder. Does the captain of the ship of state follow the maritime tradition of going down with the ship? I emphatically hope so. In our case, I would insist that he takes along his first mate and the ship's executive staff, in other words, the cabinet members. But then my question becomes, who is his first mate? Is it his wife, the so-called doctor? Or is it the individual who's not even qualified to be president? Kamala. Comments, of course, are hyperbole, of course. I don't wish anyone harm. I only want the crew of this American Flying Dutchman to vacate their offices before the ship sinks and takes America with it. Or is it too late? Naturally, I hope that destroying our republic is not the end goal. But unfortunately, the only conclusion events of the past half a century kindle are that this is the intentional ruin of America. Did anyone be that rapacious? In the case of a replacement crew, our history is less than optimal. Our track record abrogates my homes for improvement. The subsequent club is often worse, capsizing any aspiration of progress since parties select their successors, replacing progress with its opposite, Congress. There is something I have published over at metropolis.cafe. It's called the Articles of Confederation, written in 1789. Those Articles of Confederation made us a nation, launching our ship of state. The Constitution, the document, not the warship. The Constitution was ratified in 1788. It has been our compass ever since. Well, at least until we discarded the needle and blacked out the magnifier lens. See, we declared our nation to be abiding, buoyant, unsinkable. And however, our ship of state began taking on water early on as political syndicates fought for control of this fledgling republic. In 1911, the White Star Line launched the RMS, the Royal Mail ship, Titanic. It was also declared unsinkable. Tragically, it sank on April the 15th, 1912, claiming 68% of its crew and passengers. Her ill-fated captain struck an iceberg resulting from a fundamental steering error, ending the Titanic's brief life and the lives of over 1,500 souls on board. Not to be confused with the other types of SOBs. My friends, America's modern-day American iceberg encounter is no accident. The resolve is to sink this country, our ship of state. It follows a predetermined course set by an elite fascist cadre. Emerging political parties adulterated American politics, and by 1840, partisan politics metastasized. And shortly after that emergence, they began prying the magnetic needle from our constitutional compass. What is the parallel? The parallel. Hang on a quick second here. I've got to pull Michael into this. We had one little error at the beginning. Thank you. Go ahead. Let's get to the parallel in just a few minutes. There's a reason for it. You'll understand as time goes on. You ready? Go. Parallel. Let's talk about the parallel. For both of these seemingly resilient, unsinkable testaments to man's ingenuity has proved far more fragile than ever imagined. Now the grandeur of these edifices endures as a few meager earthly remnants, but are mostly misremembered, and even those are in jeopardy. The Titanic decomposes. To this day, 13,000 feet of water was rediscovered and photographed on September the 1st of 1985. And yet, on the other hand, America's charter is moldering right before our very eyes, in plain sight, and its memory is being intentionally erased. As my friend Charles Dickens sat down to write this commentary the other day, he noticed the American Constitution is being politically expunged. One article, one amendment at a very time. What remains will be a nearly blank 250-year-old sheet of parchment with the title, The Constitution of the United States. Will there be an American Constitution 2.0? or will we become another totalitarian state? But you see, the RMS Titanic is an example of our engineering prowess and a reminder that nothing is indestructible. Nothing is perfect, my friends. And even though we take every precaution, we're not perfect either. Our Constitution, a absolutely magnificent theory for governance, is enshrined as a plexiglass box, as a painful reminder of what was, what could have been, but will never be again. Is it any wonder that they want this fundamental manuscript of America eradicated? Let the book burning begin. For they are already in progress, figuratively, coming soon to a community near you, literally. The man known as the father of our country, George Washington, called America the Great Experiment, because nothing like this had ever been attempted. Every mishmash of people in history existed in fealty and compliance to a ruler. But only a few tried democracy or its permutations. We discovered that as the population grew, the democratic process became unwieldy. And as they grew economically, their rulers and leaders' desires mushroomed into avarice. Imagine this, if you will. Imagine pure democracy with a population of 3.9 million citizens. That was America's population in and their state-of-the-art communication capabilities in 1788. My friends, it could take months to tabulate votes. And by the way, fraud is not the 21st century invention. You see, the designers of this country introduced a blended concept, the Democratic Republic, where members of the body politics selected representatives to manage the country and under an appointed elected president. Under an appointed elected president? Well, back then, the people would have had a choice, a voice. And that voice gave them control. And then Lincoln came along and he paraphrased the idea in his Gettysburg Address when he said, "Of the people, by the people, for the people." But then, given whose mouth those words came from, I don't think he really truly meant for the people. So the RMS Titanic encountered an iceberg, sank in less than 3 hours. Only 706 people survived. America hit this partisan political iceberg and began sinking almost immediately. And we've been bailing ever since. We've been slowly declining for over 245 years toward our inevitable demise. But our current misleadership is doing everything in its power to hasten our journey to the bottom. America hit the iceberg that Charles calls partisan politics because only a tiny portion of its glacial mass is visible above the waterline. The majority remains hidden below the surface. And this partisan political solution to floundering is to drill more holes in the hull to let the water out. And like all the other cockamamie ideas from our misleadership, it all sounds good, but it's quite impractical. Little thought, my friends, is given to viability, long-term impact, or significance, and little thought is given to the people. But what about we the people? I mean, what in the hell has happened to this country? We're going down fast, and there doesn't seem to be an end to the craziness. This government has crested control and told us to sit down and shut the you-know-what up. They arrest dissenters, just like all totalitarian regimes. They jail them with fabricated charges, erase or hide evidence. They lie to protect their narrative. They instituted a two-level justice system enforced by weaponized government agencies, just like all fascists do. Arrest dissenters, just like all totalitarian regimes. Just like that crazy-looking guy with his tattoos and his costume on January the 6th of 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, whatever. And he winds up going to jail. Until all of a sudden somebody decides to look at the video and realize that the Capitol Police walked the guy into the place. They had to let him go. People are angry. People are lashing out violently. But rather than addressing the root cause, they ban the available tools because, you see, those available tools are the cause. It has to do with duplicity. Deceitfulness in speech or conduct, as by speaking or acting in two different ways to different people concerning the same matter. A double dealing, as it were. Or there's an act or an instance of such deceitfulness. In the law, we've got the act or the fact of including two or more offenses in one count or charge as part of an indictment, thus violating the requirement that each count contains only a single violation. Duplicity, the state, or the quality of having two elements or parts being twofold or double. As we carefully read that definition, we become acutely aware of the influences driving America to this inevitable and cataclysmic end. People can see the double standards. They can hear the lies, despite the corporate media's insistence that all is well in Oz. The problem with lies is that truth eventually emerges to expose treachery. But the damage done in the meantime is incalculable, my friends. Consider the brilliant idea of defunding the police and diverting those funds to diversity or inclusion and equity, or DIE, D-I-E. Well, in fairness, the published acronym is DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. But I think DIE or DIE accurately indicates this folly's results. DIE's altruistic yet implausible theory states that exclusion, inequity, and systemic racism are the root of criminal activities. If everyone were equal, illegal activities would cease. Crime rates in America have increased by nearly 29% since DIE's re-emergence in 2019. And according to one Clay Higgins, a U.S. representative, violent crime rates in 14 major cities have increased by 40% above 2021. DIE is killing America. I guess in one form or another, a different type of death is killing America. And my friends, the intrinsic issue with equating equity with equality is that they are different. The semantic difference, being the same and having the same are vastly different concepts, and yet we're led to believe that they are synonyms and have other implications. You see, equality means each individual or group is given the same resources or opportunities. But equity recognizes that each person has different circumstances and allocates the exact resources and opportunities needed to reach an equal outcome. Yeah, it was Charlie goes splitting hairs again. H-A-I-R-S, not hairs, H-A-R-E-S. But there is a fundamental separation in the intent of these words and their societal impact. Die, or D-I-E, is only one example in the cluster of twisted information or misinformation partisan politics spreads. There's so many that it would take several more pages to list them all and several more hours to list them all. But if you take the time to open your mind to alternative views, you begin to recognize that there is something rotten in the D.C. swamp. Keep in mind, swamps exist in areas with poor drainage and sufficient water supply to keep the ground waterlogged, with a high enough supply of minerals in the water to stimulate the decay of organisms and prevent the accumulation of organic materials, a self-propagating and parasitic system. Then there's QED. That is how DC survives all attempts to drain or eliminate the quagmire. You see, truth like beauty, my friends, is in the eye of the beholder. And so it follows that it depends on your political perspective to discern the facts. But why should we even need to wonder? Don't we deserve honesty from the government that we pay to support? Has dishonesty become the norm? Is up really down? You see, we're convinced that someone is lying. But who? That is the $41 trillion question. But there is a dichotomy here. Something cannot be accurate and false simultaneously. It must be one or the other. Left is not right, nor is right left. And yet that is precisely what we are expected to believe. Our border is not secure and safe if over 11.17 undocumented invaders live in America, which does not include the CPB's 6.1 million enforcement actions and the estimated 1.2 million who eluded them. Together, the number grows to 7.3 million. The entire illegal population swells to 19 million, estimated, except that those numbers have all proven to be false. This country has been invaded by well in excess of 40 million illegal invaders. Oh, they're not just coming from Mexico. They're coming from other countries in South America. They're coming through Mexico. They're coming from Cuba. And I can prove that because I know of some personally who came to this country from Cuba. And some of their relatives came to Cuba from Cuba through Mexico. When my friend was 16 years of age, he hopped on a boat with himself and one other guy. He had a compass. The buddy had the water. And they came directly from Cuba and landed in Florida. But what about all the Chinese that are coming into this country right now through Mexico? And yet we're told that the border is safe and secure and closed. Who's zooming who? Remember this, my friends, there is an old adage that figures lie and liars figure. The funny, not humorous thing about statistics is that they are wholly dependent on interpretation and the figures used or excluded in the calculations. Think of it like balancing your bank accounts, omitting a few charges, doubling the deposits. We're told that the stated unemployment is 3.6%. And the number of working age Americans is 207.7 million. And the inactive labor force is 99.93 million. And the number of unfilled jobs is 10.5 million. But there's 5.7 million unemployed. And so if the unemployed took these available jobs, there would be 4.8 million unemployed, plus the 99.3 million that refused to work. That makes 104.1 million unemployed, a far, far larger number than the advertised 4.8 million. So, wait a minute. You're telling me that 47.8% of the available workforce refuses to work? Wouldn't that be the unemployment number? If there's 10.5 million jobs and 99.93 million people to fill those jobs, doesn't the actual employment number now exceed 10%? I don't know. Charlie admits that his math might be wrong, and he doesn't include the diverse groups to produce the actual number, but there's nowhere we can find that states the real unemployment rate. And regardless of the lame attempts to make our point mathematically, it's all a lie. It's what the government wants us to believe. See, we're doing a great job. Yeah? Oh, no. That just sounds like another iceberg to me. Unreal. We're going to do something unusual today. We're going to take a break, but it's strictly a musical break. Enjoy it. You'll understand. I'll be back.
Go on.
If you've not figured out the music we've been sharing with you tonight or the reason for it, then you're not listening. Celine Dion, a very interesting singer. I always appreciated her as a singer. I can't stand watching her. I cannot stand listening to her talk. I never could. Probably one of the most amazing pieces she's ever done was this from this film, Titanic. How all of this came about today is unusual. I needed a closing piece to music. Our author gave it to us, which then led to an opening piece of music. And unfortunately, we switched it. So you're still going to get the proper closing piece of music. We'll return to our commentary in just a moment. As those of you regular listeners may have known, we ran a rerun yesterday. I was unbelievably overwhelmed with a wide range of things yesterday. I had two doctor's visits. One was by phone at 7:30 in the morning. The other was at 12:50 with my heart doctor. All is going well. And beyond that, I spent at least an hour and a half on the phone with my web hosts yesterday, trying to get to the bottom of the difficulties we're having. Something is drastically wrong. She noticed that some mistakes had been made on our web host side that have caused us problems with our sites. We have one website that is operating the way it should right now, and that is metropolis.cafe. Everything I post is posting. I can go to Firefox. I can go to Safari. I've had people go to Microsoft Cloud, you know, all sorts of things, and that site is working fine. Three of our other sites are having difficulty. I published some things today on Federal Observer. I got my web guy that does my service work to go on, and he sent me a photograph of the first three articles that are posted on Federal Observer. One of them was not showing. I go to Sierra Madre. I've got an interesting issue at Sierra Madre. We've got other issues going on at Dr. Kelly's website. We're trying to get to the bottom of these things. My web host discovered some things yesterday, thought we had them all straightened out. As of today, they're still not straightened out. So it's back to work, and we have to get it concluded. And in addition to all of that, the amount of business that I've written in the last 3 or 4 days from a work standpoint in the precious metals markets has been simply astounding. Absolutely unbelievable. Funds are coming in. People are finally waking up and realizing just what the hell is going on in this country. Much of which, to some degree, is what we're talking about even in this program today. Let us return to our commentary from Charles Dickens. As always, I appreciate the work from Charles. I have got other writers that we continue to hear from and continue to submit work. Justin Smith. I got a notification the other day from Mark Dwyer, who I've not heard from quite some time. And some things going on. So our job is to continue to keep busy and keep trying to keep people awake. Hope that we're doing a great job. But then you see in this country we face another iceberg. Over the past 800,000 years, my friends, the Earth has experienced 8 cycles of ice ages and warming periods ending with the ice age about 11,700 years ago. And so it follows that this is the period of warming, marking the age of human civilization. 1969 comes along. I'm flying over the jungles of Nam. But in 1969, panic ensued when the New York Times published several articles on climate change and the warnings about the effects of pollution on our climate. Dire warnings from eminent scientific prognosticators said that the ice caps melting would lead to the extinction of several indigenous species like the polar bear, and several species of avian life. And climate alarmism was born. Non-scientific acolytes of the environmental cult, seeing the potential of a power grab, bored at the global warming bandwagon, lending official political credibility to the cause. Oh my God, people, don't ever, ever let a crisis go to waste. I mean, who doesn't want to save the planet? The problem is that it's not in jeopardy. But that's never stopped a politician in their mendacity machine. Because here's how it always, always works. Find an issue, and or maybe create one. Make people afraid of it. Blame someone else for it. But tell them you've got the solution. Makes me think of Dr. Fauci, doesn't it? Oh, that's right. Profit. 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 2002. The U.S. spent $165 billion on disasters attributed to climate change. And even though there's little physical evidence to support the claims, federal expenditure to combat the natural and the normal climactic cycle will exceed $44.9 billion this next budget cycle. But how do you explain all the tornadoes and all the climate change that's devastating the middle portion of this country? Now we've got the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD, or OECD. They estimate the cost of achieving the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals to ensure compatibility with the Paris Accord to be $6.9 trillion this year. The World Bank estimates that the required global infrastructure investment will cost $90 trillion by the year 2030. That's interesting. The estimated value of the Earth's top three precious metals. Gold is worth over $10 trillion. Silver a bit over $1.3 trillion. Platinum about $7.44 billion. Now, if these estimates are accurate, then there's not enough precious metals to cover one-tenth of the cost of this bloody folly. Oh, the only recourse, my friends, is to follow America's example to print the money you need. It's, as we all know, commonly called fiat currency, meaning that nothing is backing it. It's just paper. Which all begs the question, how will the world fund this lunacy? I mean, come on, think about it. Some common sense here. Do we face the final iceberg? Returning to the home country, the proposed budget for next year exceeds $7.2 trillion. And yet we already face a $31.7 trillion national debt and a $182.7 trillion in unfunded debt. Yet we have no issue spending money that we don't have, do we? Oh, my friends, it seems to me that we have a massive problem with leadership. If you have to question these things, and that's all given that everything is up to post, then don't worry about buying gold or silver from me. Don't contact me about that. But what I want you to do is go visit Sierra Madre Precious Metals. SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Yes, I have a twisted thing about old Hollywood movies. An interesting piece that I published earlier today on Sierra Madre called Four Tips for Financial Stability from Noah Webster. Wait, Noah Webster, I mean, how far back does this go? It's simple. Go read it. Our author, who is a woman I have tremendous respect for, begins by saying, with inflation, prices, and bank failures all on the rise these days, many of us are looking anxiously toward our pocketbooks and wondering what we'll do when the financial crisis inevitably hits. Will we have to start over with our retirement fund, or will we be impoverished in a matter of months? As far as I'm concerned, our government is certainly impoverished. You know, we take a look at some of the other things that Noah Webster talked about. Yeah, this is the dictionary guy, right? Yeah. What we've just shared with you may not be a surefire way to completely shield ourselves from potential ruin, but there are ways to safeguard against it. One of those ways is tucked away in a very obscure corner of American founder Noah Webster's book, American Spelling Book, which is entitled Domestic Economy, or The History of Thrifty and Unthrifty. Webster, who lived from 1758 to 1843, spun the table of two men, one a financial wizard, the other a financial failure. But their financial gains or losses were not the result of luck in the stock market, any special genius. No, their financial acumen was more a result of the life choices they made, which left Webster inferring that the quest for material wealth begins with character. I would urge you to read the rest of that article. And there's another piece we published today in Sierra Madre called The Global Banking System is Truly in Uncharted Territory. Now, this begins to bring it all together. Exactly what Charles is talking about today. The final iceberg paper. How the world fund all of this lunacy. To return to this, Charles' closing comments in just a few minutes. I'm going to go back to the words of Noah Webster. Four tips. The first tip was that the early bird gets the worm. One of the first steps toward wealth depends upon one's relationship with the alarm clock. That's Webster's implication. The thrifty man is up with the chickens, rising early, getting started with his day. But such an action is only possible, however, because he refuses to burn the candle at both ends, heading to bed at a reasonable hour, something I don't seem to have the ability to do. The unthrifty man, however, is not a morning person. It takes a leisurely approach to getting going each day, a fact which eventually leads to great consternation and distress. And although Webster doesn't mention it, the frantic always behind nature of Mr. Unthrifty indicates that bedtime will be far away by the time the clock strikes 10 p.m. Number two, a fool and his money are soon parted. Keep in mind, Webster's talking about individual people. I am translating this into what governments do and what they are doing to us, not for us, but to us. A fool and his money are soon parted. When Mr. Unthrifty finally pulls himself out of bed in the morning, getting immediately to his work is not his first order of business. Instead, he hops on over to the bar. He walks to the liquor cabinet. But rather than brace him to face today's task as he likely hopes, Webster explains that the drink dulls his sensibilities, causes him to throw his money away. Something our politicians and our government leaders seem to do very well. And yet, by contrast, Webster describes Mr. Thrifty as one who does not frequent the tavern, nor does he drink up all his earnings in liquor that does him no good. And so it becomes important to consider that this warning from Webster does not necessarily to apply to alcohol alone. No, the root principle here is that the thrifty man considers where his hard-earned dollars are going and ensures that he is not continually wasting his paycheck on items that have little lasting value, ones that diminish his ability to compete in the working world. And it goes on. Waste not. Want not. When we think of waste, we often think of items that go in the trash can, such as old food. But according to Webster, the thrifty individual is careful not to waste his most important commodity, which is time. And that's something that our government leaders and our politicians do. They waste time in all these efforts. Another ill effect of lost time is that one wastes the time of those who work under him, likely leading to more lost profits for his business. In our case, maybe leading to greater expense in the operation and the running of this country. Does it all make sense? That's not the fourth reason. No gain without pain. But understand that in the reality of all of this, over time, each of these various endeavors add up. Yes, Mr. Thrifty becomes a wealthy man. Well, our government leaders are not Mr. Thrifties. They're Mr. Unthrifty. Because there are continuous losses because of their poor choices, dragging out many years of disappointment and misery and poverty. The difference between Mr. Thrifty and Mr. Unthrifty is that one man spends only the interest on his money while the other spends the principal. And so the question we ask to you as individuals, which man or woman are you? More importantly, which man or women are each of our politicians? What does all this have to do with Charles Dickens' commentary tonight? I believe it's got a lot to do with it. I think it's grossly intertwined. Not grossly. Because we do face the final iceberg, my friends. We can return to this home country. The proposed budget for the next year exceeds $7.2 trillion. We already face a $31.7 trillion national debt and $182.7 trillion in unfunded debt. And if we continue to spend money we don't have, we have a massive problem with leadership. And keep this in mind. As the HMS Titanic sank so many years ago, and its anniversary comes up in another week or so, the string players performed Nearer My God to Thee, a 19th century hymn published in Hymns and Anthems to calm the doomed ship's passengers. The hymn, written by one Sarah Fuller Adams, as a retelling of Jacob's dream from Genesis 28, verses 11 and 12 of the Bible. Its words stated that when he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. And he had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth, with its top reaching to heaven. And the angels of God were ascending and descending upon it. The questions that I ask, will there be a calming music as we go under, my friends? Is there time? What piece of music might be playing in the background? What song will they play? Give this some serious consideration. I believe this is what they will play. Thank you for being with me tonight. Maggie will be with you tomorrow night. I'll be back with you next Tuesday, Lord willing. Good night.
Thank you. one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.